In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And he made all things in it. And he made a lot of different things. But he made all the comets. Now, there's trillions of them out there in what they call a great Oort cloud, a great comet cloud that surrounds our planetary system. Every once in a while, God will pick one out and boom, send it right straight in toward the earth. And he's already got the gravitational systems and all the intricacies of the way that the gravitational pull operates between the planets and the sun and the moon. Well, when he picks one out, he sends it into orbit. It orbits around the sun and goes back and forth. Amazing the way God did all that. But what's really amazing to me is he talks about this wormwood, and he actually outlines and gives the characteristics of it. And the characteristics are quite extensive. And he gives them very meticulously to where you can tell exactly what this thing is. And when I was researching this and going through it, I just was amazed, because it involves all of the aspects of creation, all the different cycles that God set up, all the different elements that God made, how they interrelate with one another and how they interrelate with water. And once you go through this thing on wormwood, I just stand in awe, because there's no question in my mind what it is, because God made it, and there's nothing in his entire universe that he made that fits all these characteristics except this one thing, comet. Now, we had gotten all the way down to the blowing of the third trumpet, and the third angel sounded in Revelation chapter 8, and we're down to verse 10. And the third angel sounded, I saw a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. And we discussed why this couldn't be a fixed star in the heavens like Polaris, the North Star, because they're thousands of light years away. And how it couldn't be a meteorite, what you call a shooting star, a solid object of nickel, iron, stone. And we discussed why it couldn't possibly be either one of those. And since the word a star is used, it has to be one of three things. It either has to be a fixed star in the heavens, which it isn't, because they're so far away, or a meteor, a shooting star made of nickel, iron, and stone. And we know it can't be that. We've covered that thoroughly in the last several Sunday nights. We know how it puts out a long flickering tail like a Hebrew lamp. We know it falls upon a third part of the rivers, on a third part of the earth, and upon the fountains of water, man's water supply. We know that it can't be a shooting star made of nickel, iron, and stone, or there would have been a tremendous earthquake that would literally torn the earth apart. So we automatically eliminate two of the things that God made, and everything that pertains to this third thing, which is a comet, which God made, and that's one of the strangest things God ever made. It fits it perfectly. It fell upon a third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. I explained why there's no earthquake. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. It has a name. And whatever it is, it dissolves in water. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and a third part of the water became wormwood. That means they turned into wormwood. Therefore, it has to dissolve in water. And so a comet, the ingredients in a comet, are water soluble. We'll be talking more about that. And wormwood means bitter. What made the water bitter? That's precisely what the ingredients in a comet do, which we'll talk about tonight. And it kills people. Well, it's a particular type of poison that kills people. And we now know for a fact that God made comets in such a way that they contain ingredients that were poisonous. This is a comet. It has a nucleus, it has a coma, and it has a long, long tail. Sometimes the tail is as much as 100 million miles long. That was the length of Halley's comet's tail, I believe. And we know that the primary solidified gases of a comet, we know them because you can actually get the light from a comet. We discovered this 100 years ago or so, that everything in the universe radiates at a certain wavelength, every type of gas. And so we were able to take the light from a comet, and we know it's composed of hydrogen, helium, carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen. We know that whenever you have ultraviolet radiational melting, that is, when it comes within contact with the sun's heat, the heat's rays, the ultraviolet radiational mixing, we know because God put all these molecules together that you're looking at on this screen, hydrogen, helium, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and we know what happens when you expose them to ultraviolet radiation mixing. This is part of that thing where the Lord said, Daniel, set up the words and seal the book, for many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And it has been. We know now that whenever you expose these combination of molecules to ultraviolet rays, it produces methane, ammonia. Methane and ammonia are water soluble. We also know it produces hydrogen cyanide, cyanogen, and menthyl cyanide, which are all three deadly poisons. They all three make the water taste bitter, and they are 100% water soluble. So they will mix in with any type of water and any type of water cycle that they come in contact with. So with that in mind, we have this thing falling on a third part of the river and upon the fountain of water. So literally, it's going to come down on a third part of the earth. Now, last week, I discussed why it had to come down as a thick, 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 thick vapor, why it didn't come down as a solid object, nil, and it will settle down over a third of the surface of man's water supply, and it will make the water taste bitter, and it will poison the water, and the thing has to dissolve in water. The same God who made all those comets made everything else, and he made what's known as the hydrological cycle. Now, they teach all these things in school, and if you answer test questions from what I'm showing you, you'd get the right answer. This is something that man has learned, and he's run to and fro. Back in the time that Solomon wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, he explained something that the ancients and the Greek culture and the Roman culture, all the wise men like Socrates and Aristotle, had been trying to figure out. They couldn't figure it out. Ecclesiastes 1 and 7. All the rivers run into the sea. They knew that all the water that fell on land ran back into the oceans and seas of the world. Yet the sea is not full. That's what the ancients could not understand. But Solomon understood it because God made him the wisest man on the earth. And here is why the sea never does keep rising and fill up. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. And the way they return is by the hydrological cycle. The same God who made the earth made the hydrological cycle to water it. It works like this. The sun comes down on the oceans, the seas of the world. Comes down on the interior streams of the world, on the interior lakes of the world, ponds, creeks, and everything else, in exposed water surface, and it heats it, and it causes evaporation. When evaporation occurs, it turns water from a liquid into a gas, and it's lighter than the air, and so it rises and cools and expands at the rate of 1 degree Celsius for every 100 meters that is lifted. Eventually, God has made the atmosphere where, as it expands and cools, the temperature and the dew point come together, and you have air that is saturated. And you have the reverse process of evaporation. It's called condensation. God also put up in our atmosphere countless, quadrillion, trillion, innumerable millions, microscopic, unbelievable amounts of little tiny particles called hydroscopic nuclei. They're lighter than air, and they just hang suspended in the air. Whenever condensation occurs, as this air is lifted, it begins to condense on these little tiny microscopic particles. And as it does, it forms a cloud. And you can see the cloud, it's visible. And then, if they continue to grow to where they're heavier than the air, and the cloud can no longer move them around and support them, they fall out of precipitation. And then they go back to the same source they came from by the rivers and streams and creeks and the ocean. And that's why the ocean never fills up. It's a continuous hydrological cycle. God made that. God made all comets. And so he's going to pick out a comet He's got billions, trillions out there to choose from in this Oort comet cloud. He made them all. He'll pick out one that's just the right size for his purpose at just the right time. Send it toward the sun, just the right angle. And the Earth here will be going around its orbit. And here's the sun, and the comet will be coming in around the sun. But this particular comet, God will pick out to where it will intersect the Earth's orbit, and it will come roaring into the Earth's atmosphere, and it will fall and melt, turning from a solid directly into a vaporous gas by a process known as sublimation. It goes directly from a solid into a cloud. It's going to come right into this hydrological cycle. And it's going to bring in methane, ammonia, methyl cyanide, hydrogen cyanide, and cyanogen. They're coming into this hydrological cycle. And one mole of cyanogenic gas plus 2 moles of a water vapor gas will produce 2 moles of hydrocyanic acid plus 2 oxides of hydrogen. It'll produce hydrocyanic acid. That's the chemical process that God made. God made all this process. He made all the things that go into it. And then he told us what it was going to do when he sent it into the atmosphere. A comet passing through the Earth's atmosphere would not burn up. It would melt. And thereby release cyanogen gas to react with the various gases of which the atmosphere is composed. These reactions will produce several poisonous cyanogen compounds. One of these compounds would be hydrocyanic acid. The chemical mixing of hydrocyanic acid with water vapor in the Earth's hydrological cycle would produce the chemical reaction shown above the diagram. The gradual mixing of cyanogen gas with water vapor would cause the hydrological acid to precipitate out in raindrops over a large part of the Earth's surface, thereby poisoning many local water supplies. Please compare the differences, the similarities, between hydrocyanic acid and wormwood found in the following definition from the Modern Chemist's Handbook and Old Bible Dictionary. Hydrocyanic acid is in the Chemist's Handbook. It's a colorless, water-soluble liquid that solidifies at minus 15 degrees Celsius, boils into a gaseous form at 25 degrees Celsius at 77 degrees Fahrenheit. It is a very poisonous aromatic acid with a bitter taste. Wormwood. It was an aromatic herb of the sunflower family. Oil of wormwood has a bitter taste. It was used in John's days to destroy intestinal worms, and it's native to Eurasia. It either kills you or cures you. Now, for those who are still here, these are the antidotes for hydrocyanic acid poison. Take hydrogen peroxide internally in artificial respiration, breathing ammonia or chlorine from chlorinated lime, ferrous sulfate followed by potassium carbonate. So when this thing hits, you're going to see millions of people killed all over the Earth by this poison. He's going to pick out a comet. A comet is a great dirty ice ball with specks in it. He's going to come and settle on one-third of the Earth's surface. It will mix itself in with the chemical composition of the hydrological cycle, and it will do precisely what God said. When I first started doing this lecture series, it was 1978, and we didn't have all this current information we now have on them. But this is a model of comet dust. All this is frozen ice, by Dr. J. Mayo Greenberg, showing 100 core mantle grains bound in a 3-micron wide cluster. These are what the internal molecular structure of comets. That's the main composition made of ice with little tiny pieces of space debris in it. Each loose cluster of comet dust not only contains organic materials, but also has a structure for chemical mixing once submerged in water. A single comet could deposit 10 million quadrillion zillion of these clusters on the Earth. This is from Scientific American, volume 283, number 6, December 2000, page 75. So this came out long after I started presenting this lecture series, because they were actually able to obtain some of this material. So I'm saying that a comet passing through the atmosphere would not burn up. It would get into the Earth's hydrological system. It would produce this chemical reaction, and it would poison man's water supply, at least a third of it, exactly as he indicated. Now, this is a fellow named Flammarion, and he did me a lot of harm when I first started this lecture series. A lot of people reminded me of him. The Earth passed through the tail of Halley's Comet, at least it's supposed to have, back in 1910. But the comet's tail was stretched out over millions and millions of miles, and there were just traces of poison in the tail. And right in here is where I said the poison would be. It had to be. By comparing the varicolored line of the comet spectrum with the lines radiated by specific gas, A minute quantity of cyanogen was detected. When mixed with hydrogen, cyanogen produces a dreadful poison, hydrogen cyanide of prussic acid. The grain of its potassium touched to its tongue brings instant gas. The comet's tail contained this gas. When I first started this lecture series, we had never been able to penetrate the nucleus. We had never been able to penetrate the coma. Only the tail. And Halley's Comet had supposedly passed through it, but it didn't kill everybody. Well, I didn't expect it to, because these are just minute traces of it. But I knew if it was radiating out back here from the Milton, that you had to have heavy concentrations in here. So I went out on a limb, and I went all over the United States, and I presented all these different things, and I showed them all the different chemical formulas of what would happen if a comet melted. And quite frankly, it wasn't something that was a question of, well, that may be right. It had to be right. But of course, that's just my opinion, they would say. But we did actually examine the spectrograph of different comets, and we found it contained cyanogenic poison. Many of these molecules detected in comets, however, are not the ones we are likely to find on the Earth or any other planet. Cyanogen is one of the main poisons. Now, I knew that with these traces in the tail, that if they ever were able to penetrate the coma or the nucleus, it would be loaded with hydrogen cyanide, cyanogen, and methyl cyanide. It had to be. I mean, it wasn't a question of, you know, that's just your opinion. If this back here has traces in it, then the source is here, and you had to have a tremendous source. So I went out on a limb, and I told them if they ever do penetrate one, they'll discover all of these gases. Well, old big mouth me, lo and behold, when Halley's did come through, in 1982, they launched an armada of different types of satellites. They launched the Giota, which was the Italian. They launched Vega 1 and 2, Soviet satellites. And they launched Sakaki and Sezefi. And they were going to penetrate the nucleus of a comet, and they were going to penetrate the coma. And I had told people, they'll find tremendous amounts of this poison there. Well, I was put to the test, and I'll be honest, I was very nervous about it, because I had told people that that had to be a comet, and when they did examine the nucleus and the coma, they would find sufficient amount of the material there to actually say that this is a large amount of poison and that it would be sufficient. Now, this is the actual photograph of the nucleus of a comet. This is the coma around it. And this is where I was saying that all this poison would be. Well, they sent these satellites up, and they made their interception. This is what they discovered. And I was completely vindicated, for which I was very grateful. Quite frankly, I knew I had to be, because you cannot have traces trailing off in a tail millions of miles long and not have a huge amount of it being generated in the nucleus in a coma. A jet of cyanogen, an organic compound present at the most basic levels of life, were discovered in the inner comet using special filters on a ground-based telescope. They penetrated through to the nucleus of the comet. Adding false colors to defined areas of heavy concentration, astronomers isolated strong jets of cyanogen. All this is the comet's inner being, and they found strong jets here in these orange colors, streaming out some 60,000 kilometers amid lighter concentrations of yellow to blue. This is your yellow here, out here, to blue. And then dark gray indicates areas of weakest current. Previously thought to be a trace gas released in ice as ice vaporizes, cyanogen and jet suggested it's shaken loose from complex organic dust particles from Halley's nucleus. The pinwheel effect results from rotation of the nucleus. To make a long story short, they discovered that there were tremendous concentrations of it in Halley's comet. And then they began to watch for other comets to come through, and they discovered that this model is accurate, and that a comet has 10 billion, billions, you can't even suggest the number, of these little molecules that make it up, and they are very poisonous. The spectrum and spatial distribution of cyanogen in comet Hale-Bopp. When Hale-Bopp came through, we ran a survey on it, and the dust that rained sharply peaked near the center, a cyanogen gas production of 1.2 plus or minus 0.3 times 10 to the 26 molecules per second was derived. to put it in this plain Arkansas terminology, there was a whole lot of cyanogen in the center of it, and had it struck the earth and had it melted in our actual atmosphere, it would have done exactly what the Bible says it would do. It included ammonia. We found a type of hydrogen cyanide that's otherwise seen only in interstellar space. It was ammonia, methane, alcohol, formaldehyde. Now, how this helped me, I've got a carnal nature in my flesh. The Bible indicates that he can't just completely put his faith in Christ. My soul can and has. But my carnal man, he's sinful, and he's not going to be changed until the resurrection from the dead. And then he also will know and believe what my soul accepted by faith a long time ago. This is a tremendous counterbalance against anything that would make you doubt. A lot of our young men and women go to colleges, they go over to Arkansas Tech, they go there, and they're taught evolution and a lot of other different things that are totally incorrect. And yet, their carnal man can soak that up, he can accept it, he can believe it, and pretty soon, if you're not careful, some of them start drifting away from the faith. But I know that everything the Lord put in his word is true. I know this is true. I know that only God could have written, put that in the book of Revelation. Only God, only the Spirit of God could have done it. Because only the Spirit of God really knew what comets were made out of, understood the hydrological cycle when the book of Revelation was written, understood the composition of comets, knew what they would be, knew what kind of poisonous compounds they contained, and he wrote about it. And if he had not been God, if he had not been all-knowing, omnipresent, all-powerful, all-wise, he could never, never have described what this thing would do when it came into Earth's atmosphere. So this is one of the things that whenever we deal with the things that have to do with our Savior, he tells us that things are made of things that are not seen. And it tells us about atoms and things long before we ever dreamed about it. The poison was there. God said it would be there. And I went strictly on faith to believe it would be there. I didn't have anything else going for me. I knew that this thing had to contain poison. I knew from the composition when I started that it had to melt in water. And I was sure that one day you would have a comet, God would pick it out, it would come down, land on the earth, cover about a third of it, get in man's water supply, and poison it. So when I stand up here and I tell you that all this is going to happen, I don't have to stand up here and say, well, I think this is going to happen. I know it's going to happen. Only God, in 95 A.D., could have written what was written and known precisely what it would do because of all the things we've discovered since then. I think when God told Daniel, set up the words and seal the book until the time of the end, many shall run to and fro and knowledge shall be increased. Cyanogen is a water-soluble, highly poisonous gas that frees into a liquid. It's minus 34 degrees centigrade. It's completely water-soluble. Hydrocyanic acid is a colorless, water-soluble liquid that solidifies at minus 15 degrees centigrade and boils into a gaseous form at 25 degrees centigrade at 77 degrees Fahrenheit. It is a very poisonous aromatic acid with a bitter taste. God made them. They do exactly what God said. And wormwood is an aromatic herb of the sunflower family. All of wormwood has a bitter taste. It was used in John's day to destroy intestinal worms. It is native to Eurasia. A comet passing through the Earth's atmosphere would not burn up. It must melt and thereby release cyanogenic gases to react with the various gases of which the atmosphere is composed. These reactions would produce several poisonous cyanogen compounds. One of these compounds would be hydrocyanic acid. A chemical mixing of hydrocyanic acid with water vapor in the Earth's hydrological cycle would produce the following reaction. One mole of cyanogen gas plus 2 moles of water vapor gas would equal 2 moles of hydrocyanic acid plus 2 moles of a hydroxide ion, and that's deadly poison. And this is the last piece right here. Now, I have no idea which comet God will pick, and I'm not about to tell you this is the one. But this is a typical one, and it will be interesting to watch it. This is called Chiron. Chiron is essentially a dirty snowball composed of water, dust, and carbon dioxide ice that is gradually circling closer to the sun. Chiron is about 10 times larger than Halley's Comet. It contains large amounts of cyanogen gas. Cyanogen is commonly found in the spectra of the nuclei and ionized gas tails of comets, but it has never before been detected at such a great distance from the sun. Cyanogen results from the breakup of apparent molecules such as hydrogen cyanide. So, as Chiron draws nearer the sun, it promises more surprises in the years to come. So this is something I'm watching, and something that I think is worth watching. You know, God went through an awful lot of trouble to show us all this. And I realize it's technical, and I realize it's almost like science class. And God made man. Only God could have done that. Man has to come up with an evolutionary type of development of man only because of the limitation of it. But God just made him and breathed him into existence in a single day. And it's hard to realize how short. John Holbrook came by. He comes by two, a couple times a week. And John was concerned because he said, nobody believes it. He said, nobody believes the Lord's coming soon. He said, they act like this is just going to go on forever and ever and ever and ever. And he said, I'm talking about churchmen. And there isn't a whole lot of commitment in our churches. There isn't a whole lot of commitment to God. The judgment seat of Christ is going to be a strange place. Because for the first time, all of God's children are going to fully recognize what they did with their lives and what they're going to inherit with what they did with them. From what I've seen in the Bible and studied, I think what's going to be the most shocking thing of all is that how little God really expected of us, and how we did even less than he expected. I know sometimes it must seem like preachers are always talking about being faithful in church, being faithful in church, being faithful in church, being faithful in church. Really, it's being faithful to God. It's being faithful to serve him where his spirit dwells, in his local church. And it's surprising how many things we tend to put before God and before his son's body when all he just really wants us to do is to assemble together and worship him in spirit and in truth and to show our love for him by the manifestation of our presence in a local body where he's told us he wants us to worship him. It seems like such a small thing he expects of us, and yet it seems hard even for us at times to do that. Well, things are going on in the Middle East at a faster clip than anyone can possibly imagine, and it's all coming to a head. It's been 2,000 years, almost, since he was crucified. And I don't think we're going to have to wait too long for him to come. And I hope when he comes, he finds us faithful as one of his churches. He finds us still true to the teachings that he left. He finds us still loving one another, being forgiving and kind toward one another. I hope he finds us in this church loving one another as he loved us. I hope he does. Brother Kenneth Eubanks.